It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 11th of October 2014. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday from 10 till 12 by the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday, the 11th of October, David Basham talked to local board chair Paul Walden about legal highs and their sale on the island. He spoke with Lisa Garrity from the Waiheke Comedy Club, and he talked to Merrin Lawler from Direction Matiatia about progress in the hearing about the marina at Matiatia.
The chair of the local board, Paul Walden, is in this morning. Morning, Paul.
Good morning, David. How are you?
I'm good. But, a little bit pale after listening to what you were saying. Well, the thing we were going to talk about this morning was the so-called legal highs. Mm. I mean, that gives them a real sort of, I feel like it's an awful couple of words because it sounds like they're fine.
Yeah.
And we both agree that they're not. Mm. So what is it you're working with right at present?
So the government's working through a policy with the council. And it's the local approved product policy, which will regulate where and when and how psychoactive substances are sold.
That's if, but they're doing it's not a survey, they're doing research on whether they are safe or not.
The government put a temporary freeze on the sale of them, and there's now a requirement on manufacturers to pass a threshold to identify that they're safe. That's all moot, and when you look around the world, you know, the reality is they're just not. Anyway, that being said, that's the policy, that's the law, and then the councils are obliged to put a lower level policy in place that regulates where and how they can be sold in order to prevent the harm, and so it's about harm reduction. So it's a bit of a oxymoron when they're deemed safe, but in order for them to be safe, you've got to put policies in place to ensure that people aren't harmed by them.
And that decision from the government has, the work from the research the government's doing hasn't come out yet. This is just the council getting something in place in case it does.
Look, the government's made it quite clear that they will be back on the market. Absolutely. So there's no question that within a period of time, and I couldn't tell you what that is offhand, that psychoactive substances will be available on the market. They will have to go through a series of threshold tests in order to get there, but it is just a matter of time. And so the song and dance that took place, you know, 6 or 8 months ago, where Peter Dunn, took them off the market, overnight, which was good, was all about getting some protocols in place, of which this is one of them.
Right. So what are the council and what are you working with?
So the council has drafted a policy which has the purpose of, what do they say, will prevent licences from being granted in areas of high deprivation, near high schools and near addiction and mental health treatment centres. And so that's the mechanism through which the council is looking to reduce the harm, and there's a lot of science around the social factors that put people in a place of being in harm, and that boils down to what's called the index of deprivation. And so essentially there's a direct correlation between the income in a household and drug dependency, and essentially families or people that are on low incomes are a lot more vulnerable to being affected adversely by these types of drugs. And so the thing that frustrates me with this process is the council has adopted the Department of Health statistics to identify the deprivation, and the Department of Health have used an average figure, which, for example, identifies Waiheke as having a deprivation level of 6. And what we know when we look around our community that we see extreme affluence, but also extreme hardship. And so when you're working on an average figure, you're not actually drilling down to and identifying the pockets, the very real pockets of areas that there is harm. And so when I drilled further down into the census data, which this is informed from, What I've learned is that one in six people in our community is in the deprivation level that puts them at harm. And so for me, this is something that we need to be challenging as a community. The local board made a submission back to Auckland Council saying, look, we need to be looking closer at this. We need to drill down within our community, and when you do that, you identify that there's pockets of deprivation in Surfdale, Ostend and Rocky Bay. And we need to be ensuring that you know, that we're protecting our community from the harmful effects of these substances. The governing body yesterday, Thursday, had a meeting, and they've just adopted their standard average figure, so it is now going out for public consultation. So we'll be putting a little bit of work in over coming weeks to ensure that our social service agencies, but anyone else in the community that's in a position and that is concerned about the effects of psychoactive substances on our community is in a position to make a robust submission, because I think there's a whole lot of unique factors that affect Waiheke. We've got some very unique social demographics. I think from the last meeting that I had with the Ministry of Health some time ago, we feature the highest level of mental health patients per capita of any community in New Zealand. And that reflects in all sorts of things in the same fashion, through to suicide levels. We see the hardship on our streets. We see the, you know, I see the social service agencies that work so, so hard, and we've got this caring community. And we've seen some of this horrible hardship play out over the last couple of weeks down on the causeway. And, you know, we're having all sorts of conversations as a council to make things easy for property developers and this and that and the next thing. When it actually boils down to the things that make a big difference for communities, it's looking after our young people and those that are hard up, and we're just not doing it. So, you know, it's not right, and we've got to challenge it. It's at the end of the day, will be a governing body decision, and, you know, there's work that needs to be done there.
Yes, because working in mental health, I've seen, although I haven't seen it with the people I work with in Waiheke, certainly I've seen it in the city. And there was a father, I think, was in the Herald quite a few months ago now, and I think his son also was talking. I think it might have been two separate articles, but they were painting it a very dark and vicious kind of experience. And I don't think just people need to get through to that, because it is a very destructive thing.
When I reflect on my younger years, you know, I think as a society we're very open to using drugs in a recreational capacity. The reality is that life sometimes takes, you know, turns for hardship, and the difficulty is when people are using drugs and alcohol as a crutch. Or as a means to wipe out the hardship, it just becomes so, so dangerous. And, you know, I had a young friend that I'd known since I was very young who committed suicide in his 20s, and it was all, you know, he just got into a pit, turned to drugs and alcohol, and, you know, it's so, so hard to get out of those pits of despair. And, you know, but we own these problems as a community. And so I feel, you know, quite a heavy burden in the position that I'm in, that we've got to challenge this.
When they were last on the island, were they sold in many places?
I believe so, yes. I believe there was half a dozen retailers that were selling them. Because of the identification of, or because of the council are using this average figure, which says there's no concern on the island, you know, we have a minimum restriction that they're not sold within, I think, 100 metres of a high school, 300 metres from a primary school. Potentially you wind up in a position where, you know, your corner dairy, you know, the bottle store, any of these sorts of outlets, or anyone else that wants to, can open up a shop to sell legal highs. And it's just scary.
Without a doubt, it's very scary. So whereabouts are you with that now?
Just processing it. I'll be meeting with the Council of Social Services over the next couple of weeks, and we'll develop a strategy to make sure that there's good communication. I've flagged this with the local newspapers. So once we've got a direction as to where the submissions are to be made to, and what the basis of a good submission would be, then we can empower our community to do that.
Yeah, we really do need to get out there and really do something about this, because it's a bigger problem than what people realise. Oh, legal highs makes it sound really sort of, oh, well, it's okay.
Yep.
But it's who they get in the hands of young people, and it can be so destructive, and it's demotivating.
Yep.
And someone said to me, well, they don't have much money. They've got to have something.
Yes.
Well, I said, let's provide them with something else.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
Don't, just because you haven't got much money, you're not doomed to a life of drugs.
And that's absolutely it. I mean, we live in paradise. We live in the most beautiful part of the world, and we've got nature around us, and there's so many positive, constructive things which are soul healing that people can be out doing. Walking the beaches, fishing off the rocks, sailing, fishing, you name it. You know, get out, walk those beautiful tracks.
We've got lots of
there are life transformative things here in a wonderful community, but we know that the psychoactive substances aren't going to help people get into a space.
Well, I know that anyone who I went to their store and sold them,
yep.
they got a lecture from me,
yes.
and I never went back.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I made much difference, but I just wouldn't go and shop on their shops.
Yeah, well, I think that's got to be the follow-on, is, you know, a social call from our community. If this bylaw does get carried and passed, ultimately, as it's been drafted presently, then I think that needs to be the follow-on from a campaign, as a campaign of social responsibility as a community, that if retailers are going to be selling psychoactive substances, then we should be boycotting them.
I did that personally, and I remember one person saying, but I only sell it to people over 18,
yeah.
and I said, that's like the alcohol, yes. oh, I've done it now, that's the alcohol like I see changing hands outside yes. there,
yep.
and you know, it they're not going to just yep. stay with the 18-year-olds. They are going to be passed around. Mm-hmm. It's a serious problem. I think and it's great if we can get it out there yeah. because it seems like just because they can be sold, and I can't see any reason why they should even be on the market. Why on earth?
This is what we have to be. We have to go into this with our eyes wide open. Mm. The reason they are on the market is there's been a significant lobby from the manufacturers of these psychoactive substances who make millions and millions and millions of dollars. And have the money to employ professional lobbyists to advocate for them. And that's the reality. When you've got lobby groups that are paid to lobby the government, you wind up in a situation like this where there is something that's so mind-blowingly, obviously harmful to our communities being legitimised.
All right. Yeah. So we need to take some action. Yep.
Yep.
And we can do it. Just a couple of things very quickly.
Yes.
I think we'd probably have a better result banning everything that we consumed rather than the dogs on the beaches. I didn't envy you for that one. What's yeah. happening with that?
So the dog bylaw is coming up for review, which is an exciting thing. And, you know, it is an opportunity for us to look at liberalising where dogs can go and the times and the season. And there's some obvious issues that as a community we're aware of, you know, so presently the reduced hours on the beach runs from Labor Weekend through to Easter, and you know, certainly I'll be supportive to reduce that right down so that we're just dealing with perhaps the school holiday periods, and I think there needs to be a flip side of some social responsibility, and these are some of the issues that we're going to have to balance up. And you know, both my son and his cousin over the past 2 years have been attacked and had their faces mauled by dogs.
Oh, gosh.
You know, so there are issues of dog owner responsibility, but it's a matter of segregating those issues and making sure that we're dealing with the problems. There's other way to deal with some of these antisocial things, and you know, irrespective of whether they're permitted on the beach or not, dogs that are out of control, it's just not acceptable. And so, you know, there's a number of things to consider. Obviously, the board's also working through a process looking to bring kiwi back onto the island, and one of those areas will likely be at the regional park at Whakanaetha. And so we may have to look at, reducing where dogs can go in the park there. But that needs to be traded off with opening up other areas and times. So I think that'll be a healthy conversation for the community, and I'm certainly confident that we can come to a positive outcome for everyone. So yeah.
It'd be good, because people do love their dogs, and for the most part, most dogs don't cause a problem.
Oh, look, absolutely. And I'd just like to make the point. I mean, the previous local board did a wonderful job in advocating to the council to ensure that we had the ability to set specific dog season and time restriction limits on the island, which enables us in this situation to go through this process as a community. And I have every confidence that we can work through this. And when you contrast that with what we're dealing with psychoactive substances, where it's made by a group of governors that sit somewhere else, of which 20 of them don't have any connection to our community and the issues that we deal with, it just gives a bit of light to this concept of subsidiarity, which is meant to be the underpinning focus of the legislation which governs Auckland, but it's not.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. You're left to the dogs, which we
yes.
can handle,
yeah.
and other things are dealt with in town.
Yep.
Look, just one thing,
yes.
and I know I'm keeping my other guest waiting, but just one thing that puzzles me, when I read the Gulf News about that funding being moved off.
Yes.
Now, was that funding reserved for Waiheke?
Absolutely, yes.
So it was actually reserved for Waiheke?
Yep, it was lobbied for. It was in our budgets. The budgets were signed off and agreed by the governing body and council only 4 months ago. And it's absolutely unprecedented for a council to wind up in the position that it's in. Where not just Waiheke, but right across the region, you know, 95% of local board budgets have been pulled out from underneath them. And it's absolutely heartbreaking for the local board and for the community groups that have got stuck in over the last 9 months and put their heart and soul into working out how we can get the best value for our community out of the money that we were told that we had available. So, yeah.
And they can just take it back?
Apparently so.
It's not fixed?
Well, look, potentially you could challenge it in the courts, but then, you know, the government's just changed the legislation so that, you know, local boards can't take any legal proceedings and challenges against the council. So you wind up in this position of being totally at the whim of, again, the governing body of council, you know, who just don't seem to be engaged with the issues and haven't embraced the notion of subsidiarity. It's just a tremendous shame because you know, the real potential for Auckland Council to get some cost efficiency and get outcomes for community is about empowering communities. Mm. Just heartbreaking, very distressing because it's just not a healthy precedent at all.
Yeah, and I think it'd be different if there'd been some waste or something had happened or something you could point to and say, this board did this and they built zillion things for something and it was all wasted. But that I don't know of anything like that.
None of this is just a budget measure,
isn't it?
Well, and I think it's actually worse than that. I mean, the council's going through a long-term plan process at the moment, which is essentially a budget-setting process for the next 10 years. The mayor's made a very clear determination that he wants to keep budgets down below 2.5%. I believe this is a manipulation by senior council officers to put pressure on local boards to then go back and advocate to the governing body and the mayor to put rates up so that we can start delivering outcomes for community. And so it just has all the stench of a dastardly manipulation.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It makes me, I'm not a great conspiracy theorist, but I do like them. I'm interested in them, but this sounds really, this is very serious. It's reducing the local board to nothing.
The point that you made, David, about not being able to look at what local boards are doing and see waste is very apt. And when we look at the administration of council and we look at the high number of executives that are sitting there on big salaries, when we look at the likes of, Auckland Transport and some of these council-controlled organisations that are taking the top floors of waterfront buildings around downtown Auckland. So, you know, we've moved out of the back blocks of Henderson. We're now taking top-level waterfront property. And we're not talking about that as a council. We're not challenging those cost centres or all of the other inefficiencies that we've seen around the island. We've seen roads ground up and then relayed, and there was nothing wrong with them to start with, and worth millions and millions of dollars. We're not talking about that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's interesting, though, about the roads. One of the roads on my way to work must have been dug up 3 times now, and I sort of just wonder.
Yeah.
Well, thanks very, very much for coming in, Paul, and we will get more information out about what we can do because we need to really act. These substances are dangerous. There's no point in kidding us. They are very dangerous. And we have enough dangerous substances on the island as it is, and it stuns me when I see a liquor outlet selling those substances. I just think you know, it's just like a little drug centre, yeah. And it's not what I think Waiheke's about.
But we can't finish on such a somber note, David. I've got my bicycle here and I'm about to go and enjoy a nice ride along the beach. So
well done.
Get some fresh air and some beautiful scenery.
Well, I've got an interesting guest coming who's going to talk a bit about meditation and things, so maybe we can just raise the consciousness a bit. Okay, thanks very much, Paul.
Have a good day.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
We are going to have a little experiment with getting somebody on the air who's not on the island, and we'll just see if we're able to do it. But I've got Lisa, who is a member of the comedy club. It is called the comedy club now.
Waiheke Comedy Club, yeah.
Wasn't there a different name at one stage? Where did the Funny Bones, or
no,
was that
there is a Funny Bones, and the Funny Bones is Richard's initiative. It stems from an English comedy thing.
Oh, I see. That so but it just happens a lot of the people are interchangeable.
Well, all the English people.
yes, that they were doing. Yeah, that they did a. I'm sorry, I happened to clue.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, it's very English. And those of us who know it well probably won't, they won't, others won't know it. And the place was packed.
Yes. That's right.
So it just shows you that you can never work it out. Yeah. If I'd have been in charge, I probably wouldn't have done it.
Yeah.
But it was a great show. So you're the comedy club. You're the one that does Keith takes you now. Keith is your mentor,
yes,
coach,
producer, director. So it's his club. So right. he runs it. He started this last year. It has a formula of improv, stand up, and a headline act. It's been working really well. This year he's trialed a couple of different things. In as much as he's had just improv only nights, he's had a couple of things happen, and he's building it up to do some really cool things with us next year and actually start a club and have people learning improv. So we are starting a club. So people that want to have a go, not too sure whether, you know, it's their thing, but want to have a go seriously, that's about to start. So that's really exciting for us, because it is about learning more and more and getting better and better at the craft.
Yeah, because I got thrown in the deep end once because I was at a function on the island, and the person who was going to do the stand-up unfortunately consumed far too much whiskey and was not able to do it. And so they pointed to me and said, well, you can talk in front of people. And I went, boy, I've never done anything like this before. So I had to try and remember some stories that were sort of not just a lot of jokes. And that was the first. I've never done it since.
Yes.
And it was. I didn't have time to be. I think the thing is, if you can get it instantly, sometimes you're not afraid because you've got no time.
Yeah.
But that wasn't scary at all. But then I tried to write a whole lot of stories and things and thought about doing it. And that's been years now. I've put it off for 2 years.
Yeah, you just got
to
do it.
So maybe I've got to do what happened to me last time. I had no choice. It literally was right at that second. And they said, you've got to go on. And I went, okay.
Yeah.
And but some people look at stand up, they look at the people doing it and think, I'd like to have a go, but how can you have a go? You don't want to go over to town and try something on. So the club sounds a brilliant idea.
Well, I mean, there's two parts of Waiheke comedy. One is the improvisation, so all the theatre sports, and that's ongoing training, and we're at it every week. And there's the stand-up. He really wants people to have a go at stand-up, and particularly in Waiheke. It's a shame you can't talk to Keith, because Keith is absolutely passionate about comedy and Waiheke's brand of comedy. And apparently it is getting noticed in comedy circles over in Auckland. They're saying, oh, they've got this real natural, guttural sort of humour and a way about it that's very unique to Waiheke, and it's how it used to be. And Keith loves it.
And Keith organises it, so there's a headline act.
Yep.
And that's from the city.
Yes.
Although Keith himself is no mean comedian. He's a very, very bright lad.
Yes.
And the other, I don't remember, I've been to most of them, and I remember talking to one of them, and he was so complimentary. In fact, he did it on stage. Yeah. So complimentary about the people who had gone before him. And he's not the Jeremy Elwood. And he's a lovely man, and he's not the kind of person that would just say that. He just wouldn't mention it if he didn't feel comfortable. Yeah. But he was delighted. He just loved it because he said it was just so refreshing to see people doing it.
Yes, and that's the story. I'm trying my first stand-up next Saturday night at the show, of which I'm absolutely pooing myself, to be fair. I think it's different when you do stand-up.
I'm just waving around in the studio, you know, move things out the window.
Because it is different. I think when you do stand up, you're sort of saying to the world, "Oh, I'm really funny, and I'm so funny, you should come and pay me and watch me." So it is. I think it's a bit scary, but you know,
I've often thought I'd need to pay them.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. So this is going to be your first time. Have you got your?
Yes.
What you're going to say?
Yes.
Sort of,
and I mean, it's very Waiheke. It's I guess I can say it without saying it. It's about chickens and rooster. So, I mean, I've found I could make a whole 5 minutes out of that.
I've always wondered, I've got a line about Waihekians. You can always tell a Waihekian, you just can't tell them much. And I'm dying to put that in somewhere. And I also have a few jokes about Rocky Bay, but we won't go there. Look, people might be interested in this. I am. So I'm in charge. You're preparing what you're going to say. Do you prepare it absolutely, or do you leave yourself some chance to move with it?
I think it's like everything, and if you've done any kind of stage,
I've done a lot of public speaking.
So have I, and I think I'm kind of guessing that once I get up there and you feel the audience, you sort of just come up and say stuff, and probably with me it'll be inappropriate, and I'll go, "Oh, damn it," while I'm saying it, and the audience will think that's funny because I'll say something inappropriate, but hopefully. Yeah, I think you pretty much just have to go with it. You've got to try. I don't know. I've never done it. I'm assuming I will remember pretty much the story and go from start to finish, and hopefully there'll be a lot of laughs in the middle.
Yeah, I always knew when I went out with public speaking, I'd teach, and sometimes people ask me, I'd say I always knew what I was going to start with, and I always knew what I was going to end with. And then because the hardest part is getting off the stage for any of it. So if you know what your end is, you can put your end in anywhere. No, it's true. If you know your ending. I mean, I remember doing a speech that was in a contest, and I got something wrong, and I couldn't believe this is skiting. I actually knew that I hadn't done it, worked in my brain where I'd put it back in, and kept on going. Mm. And I just thought, you clever lad, you know. And it's just being able to do that thinking, and it takes a lot because sometimes the audience are just a blur in the beginning.
Well, they are because, I mean, in fact, I've specifically asked that they black out the audience because I don't want to see them. I want to pretend I'm not talking to anyone.
You see, that's what I found about that thing. I talked to Keith about that. I said, Keith, if I ever did it, I'd want the lights up because I'd want to have fun with them.
No, so, I don't want to see. I don't know, but we'll see. I mean, the thing is, Tom Furness is coming over too from Auckland, and he's been on 7 days, and he's apparently a very smart fellow, like as in he's not just funny, he's quite a clever bloke, and he's done a number of things around comedy, and he's done one film festival stuff, and, you know, he's apparently very talented and very, very good to watch. So I'm looking forward to that.
He's won himself a number of awards. He's very, very, very competent. I hear very good reports about him.
Great. Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
So just before we go much further, it's the Comedy Club. It is next Saturday?
Yes, so Waiheke Comedy Show. It's next Saturday on the 18th. We have got a competition going at the moment on our Facebook page. So if you go to our Waiheke Comedy Club Facebook page and like the page and share the competition, you go into the draw for 2 tickets free to the show, which is kind of awesome.
Why not? What do you have to do to?
You just have to share it.
Oh, that's all.
Yeah, that's all.
Oh, I thought share you might have page. To put in your best joke.
No, you don't. Although we might do that next time. But it's interesting because talking with Keith, we've got some really cool ideas coming up in the future about stuff with Facebook and interacting with the show and live and things that are happening at the show that will happen on Facebook at the same time. So we've got some really cool ideas around that.
The best joke that isn't about Blackpool, Rocky Bay. And Blackpool, I've got some ones about those too. So it's an interesting time. Well, that's wonderful. You were sorry that Keith wasn't here, but you've done a lovely job. You've given us all the things. You've given us a little bit of insight. So if you want to go along and watch Lisa and stand there and go, oh, Lisa, oh, yeah.
Others, not just me.
Oh, you'll be the star. I can guarantee it. I'll be there waving and yelling. I'll bring a sign along. But it's very brave. It takes a lot of doing, even with people you know.
Yeah.
But without Keith and without that wonderful comedy club, and you've got Richard Dougal's going to be there.
Yep.
Emma.
Yes. Yeah. And we've got Forrest this time.
Oh, yes. I know Forrest.
That's it for improv.
Yeah, and they're really, Dougal, all of them I know.
Mm.
I don't know Forrest as well as the rest, but I know the others, and some of them are my good friends. Yeah. So I don't know Dougal does make me laugh.
They're good fun, I have to say.
But Richard astounds me at times because I just think, where did he get that from? And Emma, she just looks at you and says something, and then she goes, oh, I shouldn't have said that, and you just laugh. You've got good company to work with, and they're so supportive of each other, aren't you? Yeah. I remember awesome. Sitting with you one day having a coffee with Richard, and he was so funny amongst you, and you were so supportive, and it's a nice feeling.
It is.
Because it's not the brutal get up and do your first night at open mic. That would be. But some have gone over and done it.
Yes, two of our people have, Adam and Dougal, and if I do well on Saturday,
has Dougal gone over?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know. Yes. Dougal's a bit of a secret character, Dougal.
I didn't know about that either.
I think there's a book someone could write about Dougal. I find him popping up all sorts of places.
Yes, he's an interesting character. He's a
cheeky
chap. The classic
chap
is where the New Zealand comedy people tend to go, and that's where they start up and grow from there. So we're all slowly working our way over there. So we'll see what happens. But look, we're loving what we're doing on Waiheke, and we're doing really well here, and we've got plans for next year, which are quite cool, to take our troupe overseas, as it were. We'll see how that all goes.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, where do you start? And it's so hard, and yet it's just worked so well with Keith and everybody putting so much work into it, and it fills houses. It's amazing how many people come out.
Yeah.
They just really enjoy it.
Yeah,
well, thank you, Lisa. That's wonderful. So that's Saturday the 18th.
Yes. At 7:30 start.
And the big star headline act is Lisa.
No, you're saying no. Our lovely camaraderie will end very quickly.
We all want people to come along and watch, but not me. Don't look at me.
You know what? Come along and honestly, the audiences that do come just laugh and laugh and laugh, and it's just silly. It's silly laughing. They're just laughing at the stupidity
and
of what they're saying.
It's wonderful. And it's great because I've known the number of people that we go together is getting bigger and bigger. There's a whole row of them now.
Oh, nice.
And we really enjoy it. It's just a lot of fun.
Thank you. It's awesome.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming in. And sorry you had to wait a little time, but, it got a bit popular this morning. Sometimes people pop in. Can I get on the air? And there's no one here at that time, so I think, it'll be all right. And so I don't like turning people away.
Oh, good idea.
So thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Island Life. Join us for your weekly catch-up with what people are doing and what people are thinking here on Waiheke. Issues, events, personalities and more. It's all here on Island Life on Waiheke Radio, Saturday mornings 10 to 12. Brought to you by Placemakers Waiheke. Know how, can do.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3, 107.4, and this is Island Life. And it's my pleasure to have back in the studio Miran Lawler, who is a lawyer. I get those two mixed up. And, of course, she has a prominent part to play in Direction Matiatia. And the first week of the hearing was on. How did it go?
Well, it's been a huge week, a week of high drama, and surprising evidence and some unsurprising evidence. And I think it's fair to say that those foot soldiers from Direction Matiatia who have traipsed over to the Environment Court in Auckland this week are having a well-deserved break this weekend. It's been a very big week.
And so when you said there was some surprises, what were they?
I think that the surprises really came about through the cross-examination of the barristers that Direction Matiatia have employed, a QC called Matt Casey, who is amazing, and a very passionate lawyer, Kit Littlejohn, who really has driven this case forward. And they spent much of the week cross-examining the expert witnesses for the marina. And I think what we found surprising was the some of the holes in the marina's case in terms of the thoroughness of their expert evidence, particularly around issues like transport and something called visual amenity landscape values, which is a highly subjective field. It really boils down to having somebody who is considered to be an expert in landscape architecture describing the landscape of Matiatia and putting a value on that landscape. And the value seems to differ depending upon whether the expert is somebody who likes nice, neat, orderly rows and mowed berms and that sort of thing, versus an expert who's into much more natural-looking spaces.
Oh, gosh, I wouldn't make a good... I wouldn't be good if I was a landscape architect, because I'd be wanting the nice mowed, lovely things, and I probably wouldn't get any clients on Waiheke. So that's it. So it's whatever fits with the at the time.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
A QC would have some fun with that one.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there was on Thursday a fairly brutal cross examination of the landscape architect for the marina developer, and I think it's fair to say that we came away feeling quite buoyed by the advances that we think we made in relation to advancing the Direction Matiatia case. Yeah. One of the common questions that people have asked, and I've been down at the market this morning and out and about on the island today, and people say, are we winning? And I wish I could say, yes, we're winning, but we're only into the first week, or just finished the first week of a three-week hearing process. And where we're at the moment is that we've heard all of the applicant's evidence. We can't really say we're winning because we're yet to hear the evidence from other parties and we're yet to present our own case. But we're certainly confident that we're presenting a very spirited defence.
When the legal team for the developers start cross-examining, then your heart can sink a few. It's like everyone says, oh, we've got our one up, but the other one's got to have their turn as the process is, and that can be a little bit soul-destroying too, particularly if it gets really hard-nosed.
Absolutely.
And they will. I mean, that's just what happens. I mean, you expected the QC to do it, and you did his job, obviously.
Absolutely. And it's the nature of the court process, really. It's the aim of this sort of court process is for the applicant to get through its case with the sort of minimum holes being put in it, and our role in that process is to put as many holes in their case as we can, and when it gets to be our turn to present our evidence, they'll be doing exactly the same.
So just something, so the developers have put their case forward. Now, how many people are actually going to, like, Direction Matiatia are putting theirs?
Yes.
Is there anybody, individuals, putting theirs?
There are five or six individuals who are presenting their own evidence. There's nobody, I guess, who's really presenting an entire case. We've had one Section 274 party, who's partly under the Direction Matiatia umbrella, and they actually support Direction Matiatia, but their particular concern is around ecological values, and they've engaged their own barrister who participated in some of the court process this week around the evidence of the marina's ecologist. And there will be some individuals who are 274 parties who will be presenting during the course of the next week, but usually in relation to very discrete areas of concern. I, from memory, there's somebody who's going to be talking about transport concerns.
We have our passions and the things, and if they're going to employ their own legal representative, they're passionate.
Absolutely.
It's not cheap.
No.
And they don't get any help at all. No one's raising money for them.
No.
And also there was a person asked a particularly good question. Perhaps you'd like to talk about that. That was a particularly good question.
Absolutely. So on the might have been the Wednesday. The days have all run together, yeah, I must admit.
It's Wednesday.
Yes. On the Wednesday, it was the applicant's turn to present its transport evidence, and there'd been a bit of high drama that morning because the applicant called two experts in relation to transport, and one of them took very ill in the witness box and passed out and hit his head when he fell and had to be taken away by ambulance. But it did mean that the other transport expert had to, I guess, shoulder the burden of carrying the applicant's transport evidence for the rest of the day. And our DMI barristers were very successful in extracting a number of concessions and pointing out a number of problems with the transport case. One of DMI's parties chose to ask some questions of that witness.
And that was very brave. It's a scary place in that court.
It is a scary place. And I have to say he acquitted himself incredibly well. And the question that he posed, and I guess it's a question that's very dear to the hearts of the people of Waiheke, was a question in relation to what the transport expert had done to inform himself about the real transport situation at Matiatia. And the question was simply, you didn't actually speak to anybody who works down at Matiatia 5 days a week, sometimes 6 and 7 days a week. You didn't talk to any of the commuters who travel there and have to park and negotiate Ocean View Road. You didn't talk to anybody who commutes via the bus service. You didn't talk to any of the tour operators or the bus drivers themselves or the taxi drivers, did you? And the expert had to confess that he'd actually spoken with nobody. And that's a really significant a point to draw out, that this transport expert has followed standard sort of transport expert processes in terms of counting vehicles and that sort of thing, but had actually not talked to a single person who uses Matiatia as their primary transport hub on a day-to-day basis.
It must have been, it was probably his, that, I think it was a he, am I correct?
Yes,
I don't want to call someone the wrong gender. The thing that interests me, that's probably the first time he's ever had to ask a question in that kind of an environment, and it's a really telling question. But there's always a risk that you get slammed back down again. It's a very brave move when you're not used to it.
Absolutely. And
people are passionate.
Yes, yes. And you know, one of the beauties of this process is that even those 274 parties who have chosen to present at some level their own case, and that might be simply asking a question or two of one or two experts or actually presenting their own statement of evidence, Direction Matiatia has maintained very close contact with them. So we work together to make certain that they're well supported in being able to have their say or ask their questions. And we want them obviously to do that in a way that pursues their passion but doesn't undermine the incredible work that DMI's barristers have managed to achieve.
And I think you'll find this judge, although scrupulously fair, of course, without a doubt, he still would help the layperson be able to, within bounds, to be able to get their point across, because that is part of the process. And judges do acknowledge that some people might be struggling with something, and they can help them to a degree.
Yes, absolutely. We've been blessed, I think, to have had Judge Newhook appointed to hear this case. He has a passionate interest in ensuring that 274 parties and generally the population of Waiheke feels that it is being heard, and he is prepared to make a range of allowances to ensure that that happens.
Yeah. And he's a man of amazing intellect. He's incredibly bright.
Most definitely.
So going around from where we were, we were talking about being allowed to make sure that the judge permitting us to put forward our case. Waiheke's going to have a week, is it?
Yes. It's a week-long hearing on Waiheke, and to the Environments Court's credit, it has really heeded our requests to ensure that at least some of our evidence could be heard on the island and that locals could have their say on the island. We are slightly delayed in the conduct of the case, and some of that was because of the high drama of Wednesday morning.
How is that man? Is he okay?
He has recovered and is home, and despite the fact that he is giving evidence for what we might call the opposition, we, Director Matiatia, certainly wishes him the very best.
I'm sure you do.
There is some prospect that he may return to finish his evidence in the final week of the hearing.
Head injury, any kind of head injury, minor, major, a nasty business.
Absolutely.
It must have been a terrible shock.
It was a great shock, and I have to say that I was amazed at the extent to which some 10 or 12 barristers in the court rushed to his aid, and they were as skillful as the paramedics who turned up 5 or 10 minutes later.
I'm glad to hear that he's okay, because nobody wants that.
No, absolutely not.
For anybody.
No.
So when is it starting on the island?
So it starts on the island on Monday. Our first hearing day is Monday at 10 o'clock at the Ostend War Memorial Hall. The day or the week will actually be quite a fractured sort of week in some ways. Monday, the evidence that will be presented will be the Auckland Council case. So our barristers will be hopefully engaged in that very, very skillful cross-examination of Auckland Council's experts. And then Tuesday, the court has decided that it won't sit until 3 p.m. because it had planned to take some time early last week to view a series of sites on Waiheke, but because of the weather last Monday, it was unable to do that to any great extent. So the judge is bringing his own boat over on Tuesday and will be taking the hearing commissioners and the other court personnel through Matiatia. They will be sailing around into all of the different bays and out to Kennedy Point and places where there was some talk that alternative sites might exist.
That's amazing. The judge brings his own launch.
Absolutely.
It could only happen in Auckland could only happen about Waiheke.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. On Wednesday, the case will start after lunch, but in the morning, the Marae is actually going to be conducting a porphyry and welcome for the court. So there will be a series of formalities down at the Marae, and everybody's welcome, of course, to attend that. And then the court case will adjourn back to the Ostend Hall in the afternoon.
And the Marae have employed their own legal representatives?
No, the Marae are under the Direction Matiatia umbrella, so right. They are represented by Direction Matiatia. Ngāti Poa is cooperating, and they have employed Rob Enright as their barrister.
Ngāti Poa is the people of Waiheke. That's right. I was mixing them up.
That's correct. So Wednesday promises, I think, to be a really interesting day. The entire day has been dedicated to the cultural and spiritual evidence.
And that will be given on Wednesday.
On Wednesday.
On Waiheke.
On Waiheke.
And I really think that will be really worth listening to, because I'm just not sure that that's really understood well enough down there.
Absolutely. And certainly in the context of Auckland Council's views about the marina, its great reservation is about the lack of consideration of the cultural and spiritual significance of Matiatia to local iwi. Mm. Thursday, we expect that we'll start in on the 15 lay witnesses that Direction Matiatia is calling. Most of those witnesses, it will be a really straightforward process. They'll probably only spend a few minutes in the dock and not be subjected to excessive cross-examination, but there will be some key witnesses and most notably people like Christine Gisby, who is a tour operator and the chair of Direction Matiatia, the lovely Sue McCann from Shop the Rock, who will be talking about tourism and the impacts on tourism, and people like Sue Fitchett, who has a particular expertise, I guess, in relation to the local penguin population. Yeah.
And that's very important, that penguin population. I used to see it every time I commuted. Mm. I think you were commuting then.
No, I you wasn't. Weren't. No, I've never commuted.
Oh, it was Frankie. Frankie
was commuting.
That's right, yes. I was commuting with Frankie. Sorry. And we used to see them all the time.
Absolutely.
And it's important that that happens. Mm. So that's going to be really interesting, yes, to hear that. I remember having Christine in here months and months ago now, before everything got really, there was a beginning of things getting started. And I didn't tell her right till the end, but she was banging the table. Yes. And I said at the very end, now listeners, that noise you heard was Christine. And I didn't want to stop her because she was really passionate about it. She felt embarrassed. I said, that's why I wasn't going to tell you, because she was so passionate. She was banging the table and she was a...
Direction Matiatia, and I think the people of Waiheke generally, owe a great debt of gratitude to Christine, who has really lived, breathed and slept the entire marina battle for the better part of nearly 18 months now.
Well, you've all got pieces, haven't you?
Absolutely.
Everyone's got different bits, the T-shirts and things being done, your work, and you put up really good reports every day about the... And
yes.
Everyone, and then you've got the last function you had, and
absolutely,
you raised...
We raised about $20,000 probably should give a massive call out to the artists of Waiheke and Toy Gallery, as well as the staff of the wonderful Waiheke Library, who allowed us to host a fantastic art auction there that was with John Hawksby as our auctioneer, and it was just a wonderful night, and people have been incredibly generous in allowing us to continue raising money for what is still another 2 weeks of rather expensive legal fees.
That man could auction thin air.
He could. He could
and,
indeed.
And get a bid for it.
Absolutely.
He probably has.
Yes.
So that's... And what about Friday?
Friday will be a continuation of our lay evidence, as well as the evidence of other Section 274 parties wanting to have their own say. And then we'll return the following week to Auckland for the expert evidence from Direction Matiatia and any remaining parties, Auckland Council.
And will that be How, and that will be the final week?
That will hopefully be the final week.
It's a lot of work.
It is. It is.
It's a lot of work put in. So people can come along if they would. I mean, it's going to be packed.
It will be packed, but I think it's important that people are encouraged to come along. It's important for the court to see that Direction Matiatia is not a small barefoot brigade group of protesters, but is actually a groundswell of community concern.
And incredibly, I mean, I can say this from what I know from meeting a lot of you. Catherine Upper, she does wonderful things. You're all highly competent in what you've done. I've had you in here before. I've had Christine in before. And everyone speaks with fairness.
Yes.
And it's not been a chance to bag anybody or do anything. You've spoken just how things have happened, and it's very, very competent.
And the court has at various times commented on the very professional nature of Direction Matiatia's case and the quality of the evidence that is being produced by the community. And I guess that my only word of caution to people attending next week is to recognise that it's not an opportunity to protest. It is a formal court process, and we would encourage people to continue to honour the very fair reputation that DMI has established for itself with the court, and be respectful of the court process. So, no screaming and swearing out, and maligning the witnesses giving evidence.
Well, just because it's in Ostend Hall doesn't mean it's not a court.
That's right.
Because it is a court of law. And if you speak out, you'll be out on the street so quickly you don't know what happened. And it's not fair. And they might hear things that they don't want to hear. Mm. I mean, there's going to be cross-examination. There could be questions that are quite, well, I don't know if they'll be brutal, but they'll be quite sharp.
Absolutely.
And to the point. And that's going to happen, and people have to be prepared for that. That's just part of the give and take, the to and fro of the whole process. The developers have employed lawyers who are highly competent.
Yes.
They're going to be doing their best for their client, as your representatives
Absolutely.
Have. So people do have to realise that. It's very important. It will not do – you won't be doing anybody a favour.
No.
Nobody. It just – if you don't think you can keep your mouth closed – best not to come.
Absolutely.
Because it is a court of law.
Yes.
It stops being the Onitangi community, the Ostend Community Hall.
Yes, that's
well,
right.
Well, thank you very, very much for coming in.
Thank you, David.
And it's been great. People can go to your
Facebook page.
And they can get a daily update from you. You won't be doing an update today or tomorrow.
There will be an update today because we've got a range of avid followers of the serialisation of the court case. So we'll be doing an update today, which will be outlined the arrangements for next week.
Do I hear a book?
Yes. I hope that the case doesn't go on long enough to create a book out of it. Ultimately, people can get their daily updates from there, and we'll continue to work with the local press to ensure that people know what's happening and when.
Excellent, because your updates are very, very good. There's a good writer in there.
Thank you.
I've always known that. Well, thanks very much for coming in.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, a weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.